Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the December 20th edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Elaine Cubb. She is with Mastering the Grain Markets out of Elkhorn, Nebraska. And Chip Nellinger will join us from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online and listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Elaine Cubb, let's start with you. We'll get a list of things that you'd like to talk about for the day.
Sure. Well, you know, in the absence of any real momentum in the grain markets themselves, I mean, that's kind of one thing to talk about is just how flat things have been, really. But in the absence of movement there, I think it is interesting to take a look at some of the, you know, horrible movements that are happening in the stock market and the wider economy and the implications of this interest rate rise that we got this week.
And on your list, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing?
Yeah, I think in the short run, you know, obviously China's dominating the news here and the trade agreements and how much more they're going to buy and what products. But I would kind of go along with Elaine in the big picture here. What might we be looking at in the first quarter, in the first half of next year? There's acreage considerations, and we're still swimming in a pile of beans in the world. And I guess, in my opinion, that's something that really could hold us back is this massive world bean stocks number.
Elaine, let's take up part of your list. Where were you headed with the discussion points as it relates to the farm economy and interest rates?
Well, to the farm economy in general, you know, this interest rate rise is not trivial. And the stock market obviously is not taking it trivially. But, you know, the Fed announced another bump up in the federal target funds rate this week on Wednesday. So that takes it to 2.5%, which doesn't sound like a lot. And obviously that has implications for folks' operating notes. But I think bigger, when you talk about the overall farm economy, what happens anytime that interest rates rise is that land prices go down. So if you're discounting all those future cash flows coming in from an asset, like an asset like farmland, you have to have your, you know, your present value, asset value start to go down anytime interest rates go up. And we see that. It's reflected. I mean, I don't think we have a lot of recent sales or auction sales that we have results from, but you can see it valued, you know, in these farmland REITs, these real estate investment trusts that people do trade. The values of those, and I know they're not popular in farm country for good reasons, but the trading values of those are as low as they have ever been. So I think we are seeing land prices go down, and that has huge implications for everyone's balance sheets and their ability to borrow money in 2019 and what they're going to plant and how those conversations go with their bankers.
On that note, the agricultural economists at the University of Illinois often say that while about 2% of the land in the United States, farmland that is, trades hands each year, only about half of that is in a public forum, meaning that usually it's from one family member to the next or from one person to the next, and they know each other, and the trade is off the market, relatively speaking. This makes it a pretty tight market. Are you of the mind that farmland values can really go down because there is a rather limited supply?
That's a really good point, Todd, that it is a scarce asset. As they say, they don't make more of it, and it doesn't come up for sale very frequently. However, and this is really sort of Grinch talk. It's really gloomy talking. But what if you had farmers in 2019, if the soybean prices continue to be unprofitable, you know, what if you had more bankers suggesting that farmers sell land and get out of the business? What if that happens? And we have seen, you know, some more bankruptcies. I think the Minneapolis Fed has pointed to that this past month. We're not talking about hundreds and thousands of bankruptcies, but more than usual. So I don't know. It's possible that we will see more land sales in 2019 than usual, And if that was the case, I think the prices would be disappointing.
Elaine, do you think there's much of an influence there for you because you're in the western part of the Corn Belt as opposed to the eastern part of the belt?
Well, I don't know. Actually, there's some of these really high land prices in places like northwest Iowa where they have a really strong livestock industry. And, you know, if you see that just in the futures prices, that cattle prices aren't, you know, they're not something that anybody is really excited about, but most of the industry is making money. There is profit to be made in the cattle industry and in the hog feeding industry with grain prices this low. So I think there's opportunities. Equally shared across the eastern and western Corn Belt. But I just think that the profitability of soybeans, I mean, that's really going to be the deciding factor.
Chip, I'll turn to you now because you're near Peoria, Illinois, and if it plays in Peoria, it plays well. Does the conversation we've been having with Elaine play there in Peoria with you?
Good question. Well, I would tell you that we haven't seen that locally yet. In fact, Class A ground is down off the highs from a couple of years ago, but it is still bringing a pretty high dollar. We have seen maybe the Class B ground lose some more value relative to that flat black, good Illinois soil. I don't know that there's been a good test yet, because I think maybe some of this will come late winter, early spring, and then into next year is where we'll still probably see the results of some of what Elaine is talking about. I don't disagree entirely with her, but so far, here in Central Illinois, yeah, maybe they're down a tick from a couple of years ago, but the good Class A ground is still bringing top dollar, and in my opinion, still a little overvalued, but people are willing to pay the price for it.
To be clear, Elaine, you're talking about looking out into 2019, correct?
Yeah, I agree that I haven't seen any evidence of this. That's correct. There's really not been a lot of sales that are suggesting that things are collapsing. Certainly not.
So I take it that this worries you a great deal, and that much of that worry is hinged on the price of soybeans in 2019.
That's right. Yeah, so, you know, I saw some folks suggesting that new crop sales should be a thing that folks are thinking about already for 2019 soybeans. Like, the futures prices don't look that bad. But where I'm sitting out here in the Western Corn Belt, I've got new crop basis is still $1.50 under, so that's still, you know, $7.50, less than $8 beans. That's not profitable. So even though the futures look okay, until we get the actual physical beans moving, we've still got this basis problem, and it's still not a profitable crop.
Chip, are you of the mind that the stockpile or ending stocks of soybeans in the United States, maybe across the planet, are the biggest worry as it relates to price and the ability of that ending stocks number to come down, whether it's by acreage or yield or in any other form?
I think that is the biggest issue in the entire grain market. Corn and wheat probably have a little bit of a friendly story, but this bean situation could hold everything back. And yeah, it's good to see China back in the market, but even if they continue to take some beans, it does look like the southern hemisphere is going to bounce back with a big production there, maybe close to a record production, and we have a big crop here, so our world carryout has swelled, our domestic carryout has swelled. Whether it ends up at 955 or 985 or even 800, it's a problem because it's, quadruple what it was 3-4 years ago. And it's hard to envision without a weather problem. Now, that could save us is some sort of a production problem or a drought here. But this bean market really could kind of be a wet blanket, over the entire grain market going forward.
I echo that entirely. And when you think of the physical reality of it, too, I mean, you remember those years, a couple years ago, when China had the giant stockpile of corn and it turned into bad corn that they had. It took them forever to blend it off. I don't know that, there's bags full of soybeans or piles of soybeans or bins full of soybeans that are going bad yet in a nice cold winter, but it certainly is something that could happen. It could be a huge problem.
The obvious question then to ask really is, how will the Corn Belt be divided up in acreage this year as it relates to corn and soybeans, Elaine?
I think that's what the market is suggesting folks do now. And I think even, 2 weeks ago, or at the end of November, there was the optimism that this trade war business would get sorted out quickly, prices would normalize, and you'd end up with, you don't have to make really seed decisions just yet, because there was all this possibility that things could get sorted out. But I just feel like every day that goes on without it getting sorted out, or when you do have the president of China speaking about his willingness to, you know, maintain their own policies and not really coming in a friendly way or a negotiating way, and likewise here from the United States, every day that passes with this continuing trade war not sounding any friendlier, you have less and less of a chance of coming into April, May with economic optimism about soybean prices.
Well, the next question then is, how will producers deal with acreage in the coming season? Is it likely they'll plant corn, Elaine?
Sure, sure. I mean, we saw their willingness to switch acres by, you know, what, it was almost 10% towards soybeans last year. So I think there's a demonstrated willingness to switch things around, sure.
Chip, how have you been thinking about the acreage battle?
You know, I guess I'd be in the camp, and maybe I'm the minority, that it's going to be hard to greatly expand corn acres. I could see 1.5 million more. I think it'd be hard to push that. And two reasons. Number one, maybe three reasons. The access to capital that Elaine talked about, bankers may put the brakes on that a little bit. Input costs are going up. I just, at least here in Central Illinois, talked to a producer today that said, you know, if your anhydrous isn't booked by the 1st of January, it's going up another 10 to 12 bucks an acre. It's already up 30 or 40, maybe as much as 50 bucks an acre from a year ago. And number three, we've just had a horrendous fall. And I would put Central Illinois, Northern Illinois, in maybe one of the better areas, having the better fall. And there's still a tremendous amount of field work and nitrogen to be applied. You get into places like Central and Northern Iowa, Minnesota, South Dakota, where it was south of here, Kentucky. There's still a crop in the field, a lot of beans in the field. They just didn't get the field work done. And unless it's a perfect spring, Mother Nature may be the one that dictates acreage. And I don't know that it really speaks to wildly expanding corn acres. I know there's still some private and commercial firms thinking 5 to 6 million more corn acres. I just don't see it. I'd be shocked if you see that number, but I guess that's what makes a market and could lead to a lot of volatility this spring based on what that March acreage report says.
The 2019 calendar year then, Elaine, looks really uncertain. Are there strategies you'd like producers to deploy to protect themselves?
Well, Todd, you know, in this situation of uncertainty, I would be inclined to take sort of a wait-and-see approach, and that's definitely true for old crop cash soybeans. I mean, what are you going to do if you've got them stored? Just hope they stay stored until this stuff gets sorted out. But the wait-and-see approach, and Chip was right for pointing this out, when you've got fertilizer prices that are potentially trending higher and higher, you don't want to wait and see forever. You perhaps don't want to wait until March or April to make your final acreage decisions if you don't have to. And unfortunately, you know, there's not really any fertilizer call options that you can purchase to protect yourself from fertilizer prices unless you're big enough to do something over the counter maybe. But wait and see to the extent that you can. And if you have the ability to sell some corn, you know, a pretty significant chunk, I think you could be selling new crop corn already or locking in a price for new crop corn. Those futures are about $4 and they are profitable. So if you know that you're going to be planting at least X amount of acres of corn for 2019 and possibly more, you should feel pretty confident about getting your new crop sales started there.
And how would you deal with it, Chip?
Yeah, much like in general we approached last year. I mean, we talked about maybe the weakness of the whole grain market being the beans. We want to be more aggressive on the beans. We've already started locking some new crop sales in here in the 965 to 970 November bean futures area, lightly buying some puts as well. I think you want to be real defensive on the beans. Hope you're a dollar early, because if you're a dollar early, it will continue to drag corn higher. But we just really see a lot of potential problems all based around this bean market and the big stock situation. So being a little more defensive on beans, even getting a start here, still today, you know, north of 950 new crop November bean futures, may not be a bad place to think about protecting some things in here.
But turning your attention to some other areas, I'm wondering, Elaine, if you've thought very much about wheat acreage across the western Corn Belt, maybe in the plains, and what we'll see in the January reports.
Well, I think that Kansas had sort of some trouble weather-wise this fall, so it may not be as big of an acreage boost as economically they would have hoped for. I think it's interesting to also consider what spring wheat acreage might do, because there you've got the ability to wait and see and have sort of a low input cost crop relatively that you could put in instead of soybeans or instead of corn even. And so I suspect that those acres are going to go up. And what's unfortunate in that scenario is that wheat is sort of the shining star of the commodity world in 2018. You have European wheat futures went up 30% for the year, and Chicago wheat futures went up 25% for the year. But Minneapolis wheat futures did not. That spring wheat contract is actually lower on the year than where it ended 2017. So that could just be continuing for spring wheat, but it's certainly an important part of the acreage battle that we're already talking about.
Is there anything from the livestock sector that we should be watching?
I think it looks stable. I think the prices that we have here for cattle anyway are a good stable area, of sort of a Goldilocks area for the industry, for the packers be making money, for the cow-calf guys be making money, and certainly for the feeders, if they are locking in relatively cheap feed, they can be making money. Hogs are a little more interesting because you have such an interesting, premium for the summer contracts that are coming up. So I think there will be volatility one way or the other. There has to be when these contracts come into convergence as you go towards the summer.
I think livestock market's done a pretty good job of pricing everything in at this stage. And I agree. I we have expanded hogs. The hogs and pigs report maybe didn't show quite as much expansion as feared. The Asian flu situation on the hog herd in China has been supportive, but like the bean market, I think we have to look at on the hog side these deferred futures, and especially on further strength into the first quarter, really take a close look at protecting some downside there, and cattle as well. I think cattle are really fairly priced in here. Could see a little more strength, particularly that April contract. I think if you tack another $2-3 on the February and April, we got to look at that as really good levels in here. So I think the livestock market's on good footing. Doesn't mean we have to go straight up, but I think we got to look at opportunities to protect ourselves and generally speaking, cheaper feed ingredient prices as well, helping that story out.
Chip, we've already looked forward to that acreage report as it relates to wheat in the January numbers from USDA. Of course, they'll update the crop production figures and the WASDE report. Do you suppose there will be any changes in U.S. acreage and or yields for corn and soybeans?
Well, I could see corn yields trending a little bit lower, and even bean yields for that matter. I mean, we've had, I'm kind of getting some gray hair, so I don't want to give my age away that easily, but we've had more crop in the fields at Christmas time than I can essentially ever remember, and that's not doing yields any favors. So I think even before that, the corn yield was maybe trending a little bit lower. I still think they've got the Illinois corn crop too high. So I could see a couple bushel drop in corn yields. Maybe a half a bushel drop, three quarters of a bushel drop in bean yields. Demand should be fairly stable. I think more importantly on that report is going to be, as Elaine alluded to, this wheat acreage number. We're going to get the final wheat acreage number on that January report as well, and that could be a little bit of a wild card because it did get really wet in some of those wheat areas late, and some of those wheat acres weren't planted.
Let's get a final word from each of you now. We'll start with Elaine Cubb from Mastering the Grain Markets.
Okay, well, I know I've been really doom and gloom here, and I shouldn't be. It should be a happy Christmas time. So I'll just say that, this is end-of-year trading. So even if you see the stock market going down 6% a week, or you see, a big sell-off of in any asset class, some of that is going to be due just to the end of the year. So it might not be as gloomy as it looks on any given day's trading screen.
And Chip Nellinger is with Blue Reef Agri-Marketing. Your final word.
Yeah, I would just kind of second Elaine's thoughts there. I don't want to give the impression that I'm a doom and gloomer. but I do have a lot of concern on this bean market. And in spite of China coming back to our markets and buying some beans, I think that we're staring at an opportunity in the face right here to scale out of some additional 2018 beans and get a good start on 2019 beans. I think that's the key to the whole grain complex going forward. Crude oil going lower, the stock market going lower, that could continue into the first quarter and continue to be a little bit of a headwind for commodities. So I think as producers, we have to have a plan, and you know, the bean market may be staring an opportunity in the face right here you know, as we go forward.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of the program online anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Our thanks go to this week's panelists, including Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Market. She's out of Elkhorn, Nebraska. And Chip Nellinger is with Blue Reef Agri Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.